Hello, it's Debbie back with the Wednesday Decatur Herald in Review E-Edition, and it is Wednesday, the 1st of February. I had to even turn the calendar in here, starting with front page, of course, and with budget issues for the state. Social services suffer, says the headline, without promised funds, agencies cut program staff, try to survive, and budget stalemates put those in need, service providers at risk. Decatur. This is by a staff writer, Teresa, hard to read in the tiny print. But anyway, Decatur. As the birth of her first child drew near, Colleen Wrigley felt scared, yet reluctant to let friends and family steer her through early motherhood. The Decatur woman was single, but at 24, she was an adult. I didn't want someone telling me what to do, but Caden is the first birthday baby I'd ever been around, Wrigley said. I worried, will my child thrive in the world because of what I do early on with him? A friend suggested Healthy Families Illinois, a home visitation program for new and expectant parents at risk of parenting problems and offered locally through the Macon County Health Department. It provided Wrigley with a caseworker who gave information and options, not advice, and helped her find her voice as a mom. Quote, voice as a mom, unquote. 6 months after her son's birth, mother and child are doing well. I'm very involved in his development and feel confident that he's going to be okay, Wrigley said. Unfortunately, despite a longitudinal evaluation showing that program services are associated with optimal outcomes during a child's first 2 years of life, Healthy Families Illinois is among many social service programs that have suffered as the state's budget impasse has gone well into its second fiscal year. More than 1 million people statewide have been affected by the budget crisis, according to the estimate. Diana Heyer, the health department's administrator, said she had to reduce the separate family case management program by 500 cases last year while coping with multiple employee departures that followed the layoff of 3 clerical employees in October 2015. Unfortunately, the fear of what's going to happen, Heyer said, with the state budget caused a number of people to leave employment here, and we held off on filling those positions, Heyer said. 2 of those positions were in Healthy Families Illinois, thus reducing the number of families it could serve. The department is in better shape and looking to fill some of those vacancies now, but many services to people in need across the state have gone away as Illinois lawmakers have failed to agree on a budget since June 30, 2015. Agencies have soldiered on without payment for expenses incurred months earlier by extending their lines of credit, organizing fundraisers, furloughing staff, and doubling up on duties, according to Judith Gethner, executive director of the Chicago-headquartered Illinois Partners for Human Service, and others. How would you operate your life without 12 months of income, Gethner said. The nonprofit has to find other resources to be able to sustain them when the government wasn't paying them. They didn't know when the money was going to come. Headline says, Social Services Lost. Decatur's casualties include the health department's Get Covered Illinois program, which helped people get signed up for health insurance under the U.S. Affordable Care Act, Doves Incorporated longstanding community service program, which assisted Decatur neighborhood organizations, and a transitional living center, Heritage Behavioral Health Center, opened in 2015 to help keep people with mental disorders from going to nursing homes. In Decatur, the Child First Center was forced to eliminate its Safe from the Start program 2 years before the impasse started because of reduced financial support from the Illinois Violence Prevention Authority. Safe from the Start focused on raising public awareness, training, and outreach about the impact witnessing violence has on children 5 and younger. The center's move to a less expensive building in late 2015, however, was a direct consequence of the budget crisis. Executive Director Gene Moore said the cost of leasing space from Dove at 800 West Clay Street are 60% lower than they were at a previous location at North Water Street and East Garfield Avenue. Other than that, Moore says she counts herself lucky. Like MRI, formerly known as Macon Resources Incorporated, and Webster Cantrell Hall, the Child First Center, is protected by a consent decree that requires Illinois to pay for services provided to people over whom the state has guardianship. We have a contract with the Department of Children and Family Service to do investigation, she said. That's how child advocacy centers have been included. Such centers provide children who have been abused a safe place to be interviewed about what happened to them and work with the criminal justice system in building criminal cases against their abusers. Even so, CEO Martin Harris of Webster Cantrell Hall said the state owes his child welfare agency more than $127,000 for residential services it has provided for two males and two females at any given time since July 1, 2016, under contract with the Illinois Department of Juvenile Justice, and sent a letter to Governor Bruce Rauner about it last week. He said the situation, if not remedied, would eventually force him to borrow money to keep providing the services. In the meantime, roof replacement, a playground upgrade, and other needed improvements to Webster Cantrell's facilities will have to wait. Harris also echoed concerns expressed by Moore and Drew Lewandowski, MRI's executive director, that the quality of services still suffers because the state of Illinois has not provided adequate cost of living increases under the consent decree. We can't keep up with the government sector, much less the private sector, in salary, benefits, or pension, Harris said. We lose staff all the time after we've provided the basic training. The shame of it is the government knows this and are not addressing it. Executive Director Diane Drew said the Community Home Environmental Learning Project, also known as CHELP, C-H-E-L-P, has been somewhat insulated by the 2015 court order requiring the state to pay agencies for services given to Medicaid patients. CHELP helps aging people stay in their own homes longer as they lose their ability to care for themselves, and 60% of what we bill is Medicaid, Drew said. We have not had to reduce services as of yet, he said. Kathy Byers, executive director of Growing Strong Sexual Assault Center, said a budget deal could allow her to restore operating funding for items such as office supplies and building maintenance. She's already been able to restore three positions, two prevention educators and a counselor, that went dark for 7 months in 2016 until she could reallocate federal dollars in the new budget year for those salaries. She added the Growing Strong also was able to add two counselors in November, thanks in part to help from the DeWitt County Mental Health Board. We don't want to rely on state funding to pay salaries, Byers said. That's what got us into a place where we had to lay off some amazing employees. I'm just glad we're able to get them back. Next headline, subheadline, dealing with uncertainty. Just because the legislators passed a stopgap funding measure did not mean the money was released the next day, Gethner said. Often recipients had to wait even longer, adding to their economic stress and load. Quote, these guys are living under uncertainty, she said, adding that the boards of directors collaborate with agency heads to create, quote, financially sustainable plans going forward, and they're realizing we have to close up programs, she said. So, oftentimes, they're having to work together to make these critical decisions about maintaining programs and staff during the time when they're not getting reimbursed. We don't know with certainty when they're going to come and give us January to June of this year and have to make difficult decisions in the meantime, because the board does not want to operate on this wait and see. While she'd like to bring back the Community Services Program in Decatur, Dove Incorporated Executive Director Christine Gregory said that since the state stopgap budget ran out December 31st, she's most concerned about keeping her agency's Domestic Violence Center and Homeward Bound Supportive Services for the homeless going. We're seeing an increased demand for these services, and we've already done all the belt tightening we can do, she said. Candace Clevenger, CEO and President of the Heritage Behavioral Health Center, said things haven't gotten any better since she transferred psychiatric services to Crossing Healthcare last spring and closed the Transitional Living Center in October. Quote, it's hard to plan what you're doing when you haven't had a state budget for so long, unquote, Clevenger said. Quote, you're not as willing to take risks or move in new directions to meet needs because you just don't know what's going to happen, End of quote. Gassner's agency is one of those agencies. Voices for Illinois Children and the Sparrow Coalition of Southern Illinois are others that have made it their mission to track and tabulate the cost of legislators' inability to agree on a budget. Illinois Partners for Human Service created what it called a heat map to show the impact of the state's slow pay to social service agencies via communities, legislative districts, programs, for instance. More than 1 million people have been affected by cuts to social service agencies, ranging from those that offer services for mental health and outreaches to youth and families, according to the AP report, quoting a United Way source. End of that article. Editors note, State of the Standoff, a three-part series undertaken by the Herald and Review and its sister papers throughout Illinois, look at those affected by the failure of state leaders and lawmakers to make tough budget decisions. Last Sunday, there was an overview of the budget crisis. Today, it was social service agencies and state investments, and tomorrow, the impact on primary and higher education. Next article. Illinois budget impasse cripples state debt and investment. As Governor Bruce Rauner and Democrats continue their game of chicken over the budget, a fire rages inside the state's bank vault. Day after day, the state operates without a balanced budget, and as a result, the state's financial health continues to deteriorate as the backlog of unpaid bills, late fees, and interest payments continue to skyrocket. The state's backlog of bills now has surpassed a record $11 billion spread among close to 150,000 vouchers and will continue to get worse if the status quo doesn't change, according to current projections from the State Office of Management and Budget. Meanwhile, the state's credit rating is sinking, raising borrowing costs. Even the state's ability to earn interest with its own instruments is limited because it's forced to invest in short-term instruments rather than higher-paying, longer-term investments in the event the state needs a quick infusion of cash. The state of Illinois is on fire, Illinois Comptroller Susan Mendoza said. We're in dire fiscal crisis, and things are worse than they appear to be. Every day, we're burning money at an unprecedented rate as a result of the governor not proposing a balanced budget and the legislature not acting on it. Last year, former Comptroller Leslie Munger, whom Mendoza defeated in November's election, warned the state's backlog of bills was growing at a rate of $500 million per month, and her projection was validated based on the five-year forecast by the Governor's Office of Management and Budget. By the end of this fiscal year, we'll be in the $13 billion plus range, almost hitting 14, Mendoza said. There's no reason to think they're going to be looking at 20. There's no reason to think that we're not going to be looking at $20 billion in the next fiscal year. Even more worrisome, the forecast revealed that a lack of budgetary process could lead to a $47.1 billion backlog in 5 years. Next headline, little headline, interest, late fees. The lack of a budget does not mean the state doesn't pay all of its bills. Close to 90% are paid through consent decrees, court orders, and appropriations, but the lack of on-time payments for the rest is exacerbating the state's problem. Of the number of eye-opening figures about Illinois' mounting debt, interest and late fees catch Mendoza's eye. It's no secret that Illinois' finances have been in a mess since the turn of the century, but in the past 6 years alone, the state has accrued close to $1 billion in late penalties. While 2016 accumulated $16 million in paid interest fees, fiscal year 2017 promises to be one of the state's worst years for interest payments. The fiscal year closes June 30th. In 2017, there have been $55 million in interest payments, and we're only halfway there, Mendoza said in the interview 3 weeks ago. It's very likely we'll have passed the $100 million mark by the close of the fiscal year. In the short period since she made those remarks, interest on late payments has surpassed $83 million this fiscal year thus far. The State Prompt Payment Act, otherwise known as 30 ILCS 540, provides an interpretation of how the state accumulates interest. Some bills, which must be considered, quote, pauper bills, accumulate interest at 1% rate, while health care providers accrue interest at 9%. By comparison, the current prime is 3.75. Mendoza also is quick to point out the state does not make interest payments until the vouchers themselves are paid, thus compounding the state's payables further. State group health insurance claims, which account for more than $4 billion in unpaid bills, are accumulating the bulk of the late fees and interest. By themselves, unpaid health insurance bills are estimated to accrue more than $200 million in interest fees for this fiscal year, and as those bills continue to go untouched, the interest continues to compound. Next subheading, lost investment. Although much of the focus of the effect of the budget impasse is centered on education and social services, the state's financial condition has directly affected one of its revenue streams. Like any business venture, Illinois Treasurer Michael Furrick said his office's goal is to maximize the state's investments and profits, but without a budget, returns on investment are not what they could be. Through the first three quarters, we earned $47 million, which is a good number, but could have earned $21 million more based on past investment methods. With figures for 2016 now updated, Furrick said the state earned $68 million, but could have had $30 million more. As a result of unplanned fund sweeps and the need to pay court-ordered bills, Frerich said the state's financial health has shifted the way it invests. Instead of prioritizing long-term investments, which command higher interest rates, the state has had to commit funds to shorter-term investments so it can liquidate them as the state needs cash. According to the Treasurer's Office, the change in its portfolio costs the state $2.6 million per month in lost investment revenue. Without a budget, Furrick said, this trend will continue to grow and minimize the effectiveness of his office. With continued uncertainty, we continue to miss out on potential investment income, Furrick said. Next subheading, ratings suffer. And this is the last of the sections. In addition to bill backlogs and lost investment opportunities since 2001, Illinois credit and bond ratings have plummeted, making it worst-rated state in the country. Illinois' credit rating, BBB by Standard & Poor, Baa2 by Moody's, and BBB Plus by Fitch, has declined to such a degree that it now hovers above junk status. As such, every time the state issues general obligation bonds, they come with a higher yield, meaning a greater financial burden must be shouldered by taxpayers to account for higher interest. When Illinois issued $550 million in general obligation bonds in June, Martin Luby, an associate professor at DePaul University, analyzed the true cost of Illinois' declining financial health and extra burden passed on taxpayers. In what he dubbed the state's, quote, financial condition penalty, unquote, as part of his analysis for the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs, IGPA. Their fiscal futures project, Luby compared the difference in what it actually cost to issue the bonds and what it would have cost had they been sold at prices the state would have received 10 years ago when its credit rating was better. Instead of receiving $575.9 million for its June 16 bonds, Luby said the state could have received $645. This nearly $70 million financial condition penalty is an estimate of the cost to the state on the June 2016 bonds as a result of the deterioration in its financial condition over the last 10 years, Luby said. In fact, his estimate was the state incurred a $12 million penalty in just the 6 months between last January and last June. The state also is facing the possibility of more credit downgrades if there's no real progress, said Ted Hampton, a Moody's vice president and lead analyst for Illinois. Hampton said under a stopgap budget, it would assume that growth in the state's structural deficit, operating fund liquidity pressures evident in a ballooning backlog of bills, and a persistent and growing pension funding challenge would continue. And as such, Hampton said, Moody's likely would continue to give the state a negative outlook as it did when it downgraded the state's bonds in June. Quote, we will have to assess the credit implication of any fiscal legislation enacted, whether it's simply a stopgap measure or some broader package that contains reforms, recurring revenue enhancements, and provisions for the coming fiscal year, Hampton said in regard to the current legislative session. Having said that, a stopgap budget by definition is unlikely to address the state's long-term challenges, so it's unlikely to constitute real progress, unquote. End of quote. The state could get some respite by passing a budget, but Hampton suggested it'd be years before the state could fully restore its credit rating. Quote, our credit assessment will respond quickly to whatever reforms, revenue increases, or other fiscal measures may be enacted, but that doesn't mean the state's ratings will immediately return to the very high levels occupied by other U.S. states, most of which are rated A to little a or A little a one, Hampton said. If legislators and the governor agree on a credit positive plan, one that appears to address the state's long-running pension funding and financial challenges, those challenges won't be alleviated overnight. Restoration of the state's credit standing will likely depend upon successful implementation of enacted measures over a period of years. Illinois problems have been known for years, and it's easy to get caught up in all the numbers. But Mendoza says those figures mask a human toll. We shouldn't be looking at them as statistics on a spreadsheet, Mendoza said. People's lives are at stake. End of that article. On to more local. Richland offers employee buyouts to ease budget woes. This is by Ryan Voiles of the H&R staff, Decatur. Richland Community College will begin offering buyouts to employees in an effort to keep a handle on its finances. The Board of Trustees approved a plan at a special meeting Tuesday night that would start a voluntary separation incentive program for all full-time employees at the college. Factors such as increasing cost of personnel, declining enrollment, and a lack of state funds all went into the decision to implement the program, said Richland President Chris Valdez. It gives employees the opportunity to opt out voluntarily and provide us flexibility with our personnel and staffing levels to move forward as we see the results of this program, he said. The program begins today, and eligible employees have 45 days to submit an application. Employees whose combined age and years of full-time service at the college are equal to or exceed 60 are eligible for the program. Combination of age and years of full-time service. Those who participate in the plan will receive an incentive payment with the weekly amount equal to their base salary as of today divided by 52. Those employees will receive 1 week of pay for each year of full employment up to 26 weeks. Participants must agree to separate from the college no later than June 30th. Incentive will be paid after their final date of employment. The plan is not offered to grant-funded or contract employees. There is no set number of buyouts nor dollar amount that the college is looking to hit, said Greg Florian, Vice President of Finance and Administration. Florian said officials will wait and see how much interest there is by employees. We're hoping to reduce our payroll, but it's really the individual's choice whether they want to do this, he said. Officials said it's too early to speculate on whether layoffs could occur as part of the effort to reduce spending. Florian said they'll keep an eye on the buyouts and a potential new state budget that could provide financial relief for the college. Officials will work with employees on when they would prefer to leave, but Florian said they will make sure that the spring semester classes are not affected before May's graduation. Tuesday's move comes just a few weeks after it was announced that several administrative positions at the college would be eliminated, including the Chief of Staff, Vice President of Economic Development and Innovative Workforce Solutions, and Director of Human Resources. Two positions will also be eliminated at the Duplication Center, which will close this spring. Duplication Center. This is an editorial comment. I wonder what that is. The cause for the cuts and buyouts are a combination of schools experience a 13. The cause for the cuts and buyouts are a cumulation of the schools experiencing a 13% decline in enrollment over the past 6 years and a loss of funds from the state, which used to account for roughly 13% of the college's budget. The board approved a budget in December that did not count on receiving any money from the state, in part due to the nearly two-year-long budget stalemate in Springfield. End of that article. And the last article on the front page, Washington, Trump taps Judge Neil Gorsuch for Supreme Court. This is out of Washington. President Donald Trump nominated Neil Gorsuch, a fast-rising conservative judge with a writer's flair, to the Supreme Court on Tuesday night, setting up a fierce fight with the Democrats over a jurist who could shape America's legal landscape for decades to come. At 48, Gorsuch is the youngest Supreme Court nominee in a quarter century. He's known on the Denver-based 10th Circuit Court of Appeals for clear, colloquial writing, advocacy for court review of government regulations, defense of religious freedom, and skepticism toward law enforcement. Judge Gorsuch has an outstanding legal skills, a brilliant mind, tremendous discipline, and has earned bipartisan support, Trump declared, announcing the nomination in his first televised primetime address from the White House. Gorsuch's nomination was cheered by conservatives wary of Trump's own fluid ideology. If confirmed by the Senate, he will fill the seat left vacant by the death last year of Antonin Scalia, long the right's most powerful voice on the high court. With Scalia's wife, Maureen, sitting in the audience, With Scalia's wife, Maureen, sitting in the audience, Trump took care to praise the late justice. Gorsuch followed, calling Scalia a lion of the law. Gorsuch thanked Trump for entrusting him with the most solemn assignment, outlining his legal philosophy. He said it is the rule of judges to apply, not alter, the work of the people's representatives. A judge who likes every outcome he reaches is very likely a bad judge. Some Democrats, still smarting over Trump's unexpected victory in the presidential election, have vowed to mount a vigorous challenge to nearly any nominee to what they view as the court's stolen seat. President Barack Obama nominated U.S. Circuit Court Judge Merrick Garland for this vacancy after Scalia's death, but the Senate Republicans refused to consider the pick, saying the seat should be filled only after the November election. Senate Democratic Leader Charles Schumer said he serious doubts that Gorsuch is within what Democrats consider the legal mainstream, saying he, quote, hewed to an ideological approach to jurisprudence that makes me skeptical that he can be a strong, independent justice on the court. Trump's choice of Gorsuch marks perhaps the most significant decision of his young presidency, one with ramifications that could last long after he leaves office. After a reality television build-up to Tuesday's announcement, including a senior Trump advisor saying that more than one court candidate was headed to Washington ahead of the event, the actual reveal was traditional and drama-free. For some Republicans, the prospect of filling one or more Supreme Court seats over the next 4 years has helped ease their concerns about Trump's experience and temperament. Three justices are in their late 70s and early 80s, and a retirement would offer Trump the opportunity to cement conservative dominance of the court for many years. Gorsuch would restore the court to the conservative tilt it held with Scalia on the bench, but he's not expected to call into question high-profile rulings on abortion, gay marriage, and other issues in which the court has been divided 5-4 in recent years. If confirmed, Gorsuch would join the court that is often the final arbiter for presidential policy. Justices upheld Obama's signature health care law in 2012 and could eventually hear arguments over Trump's controversial refugee and immigration executive order. So that's the end of the first page. Finishing part one of the Decatur Herald and Review, we're in the local section, Public Safety, Future of Macon County 911 Operations to be discussed. This is by Chris Lasvardi, Decatur. The city of Decatur is opening the door for examining which governmental entity controls the Emergency Communications Center in Macon County. The city council decided Monday to provide a required one-year notice of its intent to terminate terms of an intergovernmental agreement with the county. Under terms of the agreement, entered into June 15, 2015, the city provides dispatching services to the Macon County Sheriff's Office and smaller police and fire departments within the county. If we have time, we'll come back to this article in part two. So this is the end of part one. This is Debbie saying talk to you soon.